Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Do you ever feel like economic forces are conspiring to keep you from getting ahead? Joe Santos joins us today for this week's Morning Macro. It is a crash course in economic literacy, and you can find Joe's blog at schooled.blog.com. He's joining us today from the Janine Basinger studio at South Dakota State University, where Professor Santos is with the Department of Economics. And today we're talking about a revolution in macroeconomic policy that impacts the wage growth and unemployment rate even today. Hey, Joe, welcome back.
Hi, Laurie.
Let's start with the Phillips curve and why we care about it. What is it and why is it a big deal?
So this curve that everybody recognizes in name is a relationship between unemployment and the inflation rate. And so your listeners can imagine a situation where as the unemployment rate falls, and so think the labor market tightens, wages tend to rise, and more generally, the inflation rate tends to rise. So this is something that was popularized in the late 1950s by an economist by the name of Phillips. And what he did was plotted out, and there was quite a bit of statistical analysis, in fairness to him, that backed this up, but plotted out unemployment rates and changes in wages for the United Kingdom in the 1950s and even before that. And this caught on, and it caught on in part because almost to the day that he published this in the late 1950s, we began monitoring the U.S. economy with this relationship in mind. And we noticed that throughout the 1960s, sure enough, as the unemployment rate fell, wages grew. And with that, there was this rise in the inflation rate more generally. So there it was, the Phillips curve. And now macroeconomists have this relationship sort of burned in our brains, thinking, well, anytime the unemployment rate goes down, and in particular goes down very low to below what we would think of as the sort of the natural long run rate, well, we're just waiting for wages to rise and again, inflation to rise more generally, waiting for this to happen, you know, sort of at any moment. And the curve is really shaped macroeconomic policy as well. So you refer to the revolutions, and it is plural. The first revolution was the Phillips curve. The next revolution was the notion that this thing was ridiculous, and that there was no such relationship, that the unemployment rate was independent of the wage rate. And then the next revolution, well, we're sort of living it right now. We can go into some detail on that if you'd like.
So is the idea that if it's the job market is tight, then workers can demand more money or employers will pay more money to get those good workers? What's the sort of human driver of this?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. Very generally speaking, wages, and by the way, we're talking about, you know, nominal wages. We always leave off the word nominal, but we mean the dollar per hour. So the amount of dollars, let's say, per hour. And of course, if you're on a salary, this, the basic idea still apply. And so there are two general forces driving wages at any moment in time. One is the inflation rate. And the other is the growth rate of labor productivity. And this is actually really intuitive. If you think about a table with an employer on one end of it and an employee on the other, and they're about to negotiate for a wage or a wage increase, and let's just for concreteness think of the perspective of the employee. The employee is going to, generally speaking, make two arguments. I can bet you anything. One argument might go like this. I need a raise. I need more dollars per hour because my dollars per hour that I now receive, they don't buy as much as they used to. So that's the inflation argument that drives wages. The other argument she might make, again, very generally, will be something like, you know, when we agreed to this wage, I produced 5 widgets an hour, but now I'm capable of producing 8 widgets an hour. So I want a raise, right? Well, that's a labor productivity argument. So both of those forces drive the nominal wage, inflation and labor productivity. And again, you can think about that as the result of a negotiation between employer and employee.
How are the policies, is policy tinkered with how much to sort of to manipulate that? Or does it happen naturally on its own and we're just measuring it?
Sure. So in fairness to Phillips, I think he was identifying a relationship, something he was observing for the UK economy, something we later, as I say, observed for the US economy. Though he did suggest that this was somewhat of what we call the policy menu. In other words, you open up the menu and you say, well, I want this level of unemployment. And so the policymaker looks to the inflation column and it says, I need to then produce this amount of inflation. And if this seems ridiculously simplistic, we sort of look at it that way today. But that was the initial interpretation, was this is a policy menu. If you want a little less unemployment, create a little inflation. Ultimately, wages will reflect the inflation, but at the same time, the labor market will tighten and you'll get your reduction in unemployment. Today, we don't think of it that simply. And to be fair, I don't know that we ever really thought of it that simply, because we recognize that you can't tweak a real variable like unemployment, which is determined based on search costs and job finding and job separation and all that stuff, with a nominal variable like, say, inflation. One can't have a long run effect on the other. Initially, that was the sort of thinking that, you know, policy might be able to manipulate this trade-off in such a way as to reduce the unemployment rate over the long term. But today, we would tend to think, I think 9 out of 10 macroeconomists would say, no, that's a fool's errand. The unemployment rate has its own forces driving it, and inflation is, well, just going to introduce more inflation. That's all you're going to get with that. So right now, if we were to plot the relationship, and of course I did on school.blog, you'll notice something really bizarre. The Phillips curve, such as it is, the relationship between unemployment and inflation, is horizontal. That is, if you look at the unemployment rate right after the Great Recession, think 10%. Wage growth right after the Great Recession, think 2%. Today, the unemployment rate is below 4%. It is historically low. Wage growth, still about 2.5, 2.6, maybe 2.9 at most. There doesn't seem to be any pressure on wages, and so more generally on inflation, even though the unemployment rate is very low. This is a completely new world. Again, the original Phillips curve wouldn't predict it. The revolution, when we sort of tossed the Phillips curve out, that wouldn't have predicted it. This is a very strange set of circumstances where wage growth is just anemic. Again, think 2-ish, 3%, when an unemployment rate at 3.8 would suggest a much tighter labor market.
Do people get that? Are people feeling that? And when they hear you say that, are they saying, yeah, I thought so. It's really hard, to get ahead. We keep hearing this great economic news, but it doesn't seem to be all that great for us. How do people feel this sort of revolution, if you will, that we are in right now?
Yeah, I suspect they do. So again, if we go back to those two forces, the inflation rate, that can explain why your wage would grow. Your labor productivity, that would explain why your wage would grow. The inflation one, I'll be very honest, as a monetary economist, that's sort of very intellectually curious. It's interesting. But I think most folks wouldn't lose sleep over learning that there's a lot less inflation out there than there was before. The other force, I think, is something worth losing a little sleep over, and that is the very low labor productivity rate. So again, just for simplicity, think, inflation rate of 2%, and then labor productivity growth of be less than 1% a year. That's probably half of what we're used to prior to about 05, 06. And yes, 05, 06 comes before the recession. The low labor productivity growth seems to have become sort of a reality for us before the Great Recession. And that, I think, is the real problem, because folks, while no one feels, less productive or something, the reality is at 50,000 feet, labor, as we measure productivity, labor does seem to be less productive now than it was, say, 10, 12 years ago, and wages reflect that. So, yeah, I think folks would be forgiven for thinking, hey, wait, something's going on here. It's not so much that my purchasing power is not rising over time. That's not what's sort of keeping me up at night. It's that I would expect raises based on productivity over time, and I'm not getting those sorts of raises, again, at the macroeconomic level. So, yeah, it's, I think, of the two problems, the labor productivity is the bigger issue.
Are we tapped out on how productive we can be?
I hope not. This is a really, really big...
What's happening there, yeah.
Yeah, this is, of the two puzzles, you know, the missing inflation, as the Fed has grown accustomed to calling it, and then the missing labor productivity. The missing labor productivity is the bigger problem. There's a lot of debate around this. There'll be a future episode based on this. What it means is that per hour of input of labor, we're getting essentially less real gross domestic product off the assembly line. And we can come up with a list of possible culprits. It could be physical capital that complements labor and there isn't enough investment in machinery and equipment and software and that sort of thing. Could be human capital, could be training, and may not be enough training, but maybe it's the wrong kind of training for a new brave economy. I don't know. Or as I like to say, it could be the recipe, could be technology, the way we combine all these inputs into outputs. We're not coming up with sort of new and innovative recipes at the rate we once were, again, at the macroeconomic level. So that's a really big question, and the way you posed it is precisely the way the macroeconomics profession is sort of thinking about it. Is this just a new normal? You know, the sort of flippant joke is you only invent indoor plumbing and penicillin once. So is this sort of the new normal now? We have less labor productivity than before. Or is this some sort of aberration that feels really long when you're living in it, but, you know, maybe gone in the next few years and we'll sort of look back and not think much of it.
How does this affect people at different stages of their life to live through this time in history? Say you're graduating from college right now and you're graduating into this economy. What does that look like for those graduates?
Yeah, so labor productivity is sort of a long-run issue. If you have high labor productivity, then your standard of living, let's say, can double that much more quickly than it would otherwise. So right now, given what we're looking at for labor productivity, income per capita may take an entire lifetime to double. Whereas the doubling is just a benchmark approach to talking about this. If labor productivity itself were to double, that time it would take for the quality of life to increase and so forth would be cut in half. So these folks entering the labor market right now, if these rates of labor productivity stay as low as they are, they can look forward to doubling their means, their resources, and so forth, over the course of 70 years, which is not a very wonderful prospect, as opposed to, say, 25 or 30 or 35 if that labor productivity rate were higher. So it has consequences, not from Tuesday to Wednesday, let's say, but over the course of 10, 20, 30 years, you would much prefer to live in an economy where that rate was, say, 2 or 2.5%, as opposed to, say, 1%, which is what it is right now.
Do they measure labor productivity growth with different industries when you're taking that macroeconomic look? Are you looking at differences in different areas?
Sure. So, by definition, and everyone gets sick of macroeconomists making this point, I know, but by definition, the macroeconomy is sort of everything. So when I'm saying it's, say, 0.9% labor productivity growth or 1%, that's looking from 50,000 feet. It's a homogenization of, everyone in the economy. Of course, if we break that out by industry, we get different effects. So folks in IT and software and maybe healthcare technology, you'll see higher rates of productivity, whereas in sort of mainline traditional conventional manufacturing, you might see lower levels of productivity. But even then, you can get more granular in manufacturing, and in some sectors, you'll see very high productivity. So yeah, what we're citing is an average. But again, the sort of the macroeconomist defense is the same here. We've always been doing this, looking at it as an average. And before, when we were looking at it as an average, it was growing at 2%. And now it's growing at 1%. So your point is very well taken. There is some, we say, heterogeneity. Not every industry looks the same in terms of productivity. But it's also true that we've been looking at this broad aggregation, this average, for many, many decades. And this decade, let's say, doesn't look like anything we've seen in the past. And there's a table on the blog where folks can just take a look at this, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, 80s, and so on. And in the last 10 years, labor productivity growth wage growth, inflation too, has all been historically low.
You can find more at schooled.blog.com, and we'll put a link up to those blogs on our website as well at listen.sdpb.org. Joe Santos from the Janine Basinger Studio at South Dakota State University. Hey, thanks, Joe.
Thank you, Lori.